Thank you, James. I did wonder if, for the sake of brevity, I could shorten this to just meth tent makers, but it kind of puts a Breaking Bad spin on the whole talk, so I don't think we'll do that. What we're wanting to do in this afternoon's presentation is kind of go through, get you oriented to some of what we've heard from tent makers, some of the dialogue that's resulted from this. Every once in a while, you're going to see this very subtly placed product placement. I do have some of the tent maker books available if you are interested. But sort of the flow that I'm going to be drawing from in terms of information is we're involved in an interdenominational research project. And from that research project, we got some reports out, some of which are available for free on the website there. And then a group of us sort of got together to collaborate on creating a book. And so it's a combination of reflection on the research and then also drawing on the stories of current tent makers. We were able to draw upon a number of Tyndale professors to write chapters as tent makers. The joke I heard was it's because Tyndale's pay is so low, everyone has to have another job as a pastor anyway. So here are the three questions that we tried to use to frame our research project. Okay, so this was a multi-methods research project. We used some focus groups, literature review. Then we talked to a number of tent makers. And then we also had a quantitative component with pastoral psychologist Dr. Wanda Malcolm at Wycliffe College. So the three questions we used to frame the overall research project are: what are the key features of the diverse expressions of bivocational ministry in Canada? So trying to surface what's going on here. What are significant biblical theological emphases to consider? And how can promotion of the opportunities and resourcing of the challenges take place strategically? We are using a community-based research approach. So sort of we're thinking about three phases. You have the regular kind of research of getting information, the knowledge generation phase, and then you have the knowledge mobilization phase, where you start sharing with people, here's what we learned. And then you have community mobilization, right? So we drew upon people like myself who have previous experience as tent makers, and also people who are currently tent makers to speak into the design, to be part of framing the questions. But the end result is we actually want some kind of mobilization taking place. How can we better help people who are balancing both congregational leadership and other work? How can we engage people meaningfully in the discernment of, is this the right path forward for you as you pursue your calling? And what does that mean for us as a church at large? So you folks are coming in on the community mobilization phase. I'm seeing you folks as some of the participants and the workers here. And that's where I want to reach in this conversation. So I'm going to talk fast. For those of you who are my Salvation Army employees, you haven't often been exposed to fast talking, James. You may never want to be again. But talk fast through the presentation just to get you guys prepped so we can have some conversation at the end. I put up the cover page for our larger research report. There's a lot of people on here. This is just a fraction of the number of people from the different denominations, parachurches, who participate in helping inform us, help things happen. For any of the Free Methodists in the crowd, I do have to underline Amy Bratton's name. Amy has been like our administrative quarterback. She's really been the centerpiece of making everything go forward. If you know Amy, you understand why that would be possible. But we had a number of partners involved. So who did we talk to? We talked to 16 women, 24 men from a bunch of different provinces. We talked to people who self-identified in their congregational role as being like a lead or solo pastor or an associate pastor, people who are specialists, so someone who is, for example, a youth pastor and a multi-staff team, church planters. We had a number of church planters in our interviews, co-pastors. So, often that was spouses that they were pastoring together, and volunteer ministers. So people are getting no pay from the church. About 20% were born outside of Canada, so that's approximating Canadian national averages. I know that feels low for you, those of you in the GTA, but that's sort of the national. And about half of them were Free Methodists or Salvationists. So there we go. That's our Wesleyan content. So some of these people we were talking to, when they described their congregation, we really didn't apply a filter, like to ask them, are you a big church? Are you a small church? But as they're sharing their story, you start to realize some of them were small enough that we might call them just an incarnational ministry, right? Like my wife and I invite people from our apartment building into our apartment. We're trying to make our apartment in this building the community center, the community hub, right? That kind of an entity. And then we had some people who said, yeah, they're part of a multi-staff team at a congregation. We had a mix of urban and rural churches in the study. What are key features of the diverse expressions? So when we were asking people, who do you know who's a tent maker? It was an awkward question, the Salvation Army, because the whole tent maker bivocational doesn't resonate. We had to talk about, you know, well, multi-role. Like if you're managing a thrift store and you're also functionally the pastor of your congregation and you're also providing a food bank for your community, other denominations consider that more than one job. But in the Salvation Army, there's sort of a theology around, well, we're called to the community and do whatever, right? So we had to adjust the language a little bit. But as we were hunting for people, we were looking for people who had a diversity of tasks. We knew we weren't, in this study, going to be able to be representative and do sort of a sample of everybody in Canada who's involved. But we tried to find people who had diverse combinations of congregational leadership and other work. So what did they do? There are 44 different roles. Those of you who are good at math, if we interviewed 40 people and there's 44 roles, we had to shift the language partway through the study from bivocational to multivocational. Some of our people were identifying they had like more than one other side gig. Or sometimes the church was one of the multiple side gigs that they had. I've tried to, for brevity's sake, kind of categorize some of the roles that we heard. This is just a rough categorization, but some of the work they were doing was stuff that we might recognize in one way or another from as ministry, right? One person was an editor for their denominational Sunday school material. We had a variety of different chaplains. Someone was a coach for church planters in their denomination, but it was like a fraction of their time in a week. The funeral and wedding officiants were not doing that for a church. They were doing that for a business. The funeral officiant, he said, yeah, I'm on a 24-hour call. Funeral home contacts me and I have to decide right away, can I take this funeral from someone in the community or do they need to call somebody else? The wedding officiant had set up their own company to do weddings. Here's an example of the week of one of our tent makers. So this person is a business analyst by day and pastor by night. So they share preaching with someone else who actually serves multiple churches in their network of churches. They're one of those churches that always has food. You might want to go there. And the day, you know, pre-COVID started with a 5 a.m. wake up in order to be able to do the 1 hour commute. So they said, yeah, sometimes I can study during my break time. In the evenings, this lighter pink is sort of, you know, it depends on the week as to whether or not they're doing this, but it could be home visitation or it could be prayer meeting. Wednesday nights, we're always committed to mentoring or prayer meetings. This is a church that invests heavily in mentoring of other leaders. You might want to take note of that when we start talking about what can congregations be doing. Light pink here, home visitation, and the Friday evenings was always youth or prayer meeting. Saturday, they didn't want to tell me what they're doing. I'm hoping they're taking some time for themselves. This example, the person is a chaplain, but they're in a rural area and they do chaplaincy on Monday at the regional health center. They go into a hospital and they meet with people. Tuesday morning, they're doing telehealth chaplaincy, which I didn't know was a thing. Then, you know, you can see they're doing church stuff in the afternoon at the office. They're in at the church office on Wednesday. On Thursday, they have prayer meeting and church office work. And Friday, they actually do mobile palliative care, where they drive to the person's house and offer chaplaincy to them in their own home as they're sort of in palliative care. And Saturday, they reserve for hanging out with their kids. This particular individual, you know, they start at 4:45 in the morning with their devotions to go to the gym. They're very disciplined people. It's almost like they work for an army. 8 a.m. to 9 a.m., they go to the gym, and then they're doing social service stuff for the rest of the day. Tuesday, they're doing some social service stuff, but because it's an integrated kind of facility, they can do Bible study as part of that. They have chapel. Wednesday's their day off, but they're doing a master's degree. And so part of their day off, their recreational activity is getting papers written. And then in the Wednesday and Friday evenings, they're doing community meals. Thursday, intercession. They have a bunch more. There's a very multifaceted social service work that they were providing within their city. And then on Saturday, they might have a men's or women's group and some visitation. So this one, everything is light colored because they said there is no pattern. My week flexes from week to week. They said, usually in the morning, I'm working as a freelance marketer and I make a ton of money so I can do whatever I want with the rest of my day. So everyone's Googling now, freelance marketing, how do I get into it? So they were part of a Christian community and they said, yes, sometimes like we might go out to a community art thing and then we'll get together and reflect on what we experienced, or, you know, we might hold a dance, or we might, like, these were the kinds of spiritual activities they're organizing for their small community. And in the evenings they said, yeah, that's usually time where we can sort of prep, keep the community together, keep things flowing. And they had a co-colleague who was doing this leadership with them. So if I can make two observations to you, a lot of the people were highly, highly structured in their week. Like, this day I'm doing this for this many hours, this day I'm doing this for this many hours. And then, you know, there's a few people who they had worked things out in such a way that they had a high degree of flexibility in their week. So we partnered with the Wellness Project at Wycliffe. And what they found as they invited the multivocational folks to participate in their diagnostic survey around wellness. So how close are you as a minister to burnout? They found that the aspects that they found were significant to people. This, there's a ghost. Here we go. We're cultivating personal spiritual depth, vocation and calling, building work relationships and trust, and time and diversity of tasks. Interestingly, if you read the research report, that the time and diversity of tasks also showed up as one of the negative aspects. the challenge of organizing things, scheduling things, keeping things on track. For the book, Wanda, Bethann, and Elvira did a statistical comparative study of the sample they already had of univocational ministers. So people who say, yeah, my main thing is I'm the minister, preacher, pastor, whatever. And compared that with the findings from our multivocational group. And so if you actually read that chapter in the book, you have to take the mindset of like some kind of procedural detective drama where they're trying to figure out, well, what is the difference between being multivocational and univocational? Well, imagine a procedural drama that actually expected you to not get tired of math. Okay, that's more like what that chapter is like. And the spoiler alert is at the end, they said, we don't see a statistically significant difference between univocational and multivocational people on wellness. So it's not like if you have more than one job, you're necessarily closer to burnout. For me, I believe that raises a lot of interesting questions. Are there people who are drawn towards needing multiple things on the go all the time. A couple of our interviewees said that was true. One guy said, yeah, my mind actually slows down when I'm in crisis mode. He said, I was in a business call and the snow caved in my roof while I was on the call. I finished the call and at the end, I laughed and I said, oh yeah, now I have to go deal with the fact that my roof has caved in. And the other people and my other coworkers in the call were saying, what? You didn't stop everything? He says, no, it's fine. You know, but this was an individual who claimed that. And when he went through his week, I believe the numbers kind of work out of saying, yeah, I work 100 hours a week, but this is okay. This is how I'm wired, is kind of the way they describe that. I don't think that was true of everyone in the study. I think that person was probably an outlier, but we hope. Yeah, there's someone who cares about pastors' well-being who's laughing right now. But it does raise interesting questions. Are certain people drawn to the diversity of tasks, and do they enjoy having these different work environments where they get to build relationships? So I'm not going to get into all the biblical theological things, and we didn't try to separate the Salvationists and Free Methodists from the rest of the group to figure out this out, but I'm going to just lay a few in front of you just to sort of spark some conversation. So here's a quote from someone about calling. Well, one of the first things I would want to say is that bivocational ministry is something that will only work if you have a very clear sense of call to the demands that you'll face. Because there is, you know, seasons and moments where bivocational, trivocational work, you're exhausted, you're depleted, and it's that sense of calling that you rely on. The trust that God by Spirit is going to enable you and empower you, and that this is your reasonable act of service and love for God and for Jesus, right? So just take a moment and think about how many situations you've been in where you've gone deep in exploring with someone what their calling is and what that means for them, right? Is that something that we need to, for those of us who do mentor, for those of us who do train, for those of us who do encourage, is that something we need to sort of bring into the conversation every once in a while? We asked them a specific question. What is your theology of work? One of the interviewees was very brief, said it's all spiritual. All the stuff that I'm doing through my week is spiritual. That's one response. Here's another response. This person said, oh yeah, I just preached on that. So this was like the pop quiz they're already prepared for. So I think, you know, doing your work as unto the Lord, as the scripture would encourage us to do, is really faced with that daily. And then also understanding that people watch, right? People knowing the pastor, the minister, they're watching how they respond to things and how I treat people and how I treat customers and how I speak to managers, how I deal with challenges. It's just daily life. Another interviewee said, and this is sort of switching this a little bit, like where does theology arise within your other work? He said, what I've learned in my agricultural career informs my church ministry. Like there are things I've learned, agricultural and farming, that are really quite vital for me. And I'm a better pastor because I do this other stuff. And also on the other hand, my church ministry informs my farming. And so they mesh. And I think both careers are richer because of that. Many of my sermon topics have come from my agricultural experience, and they're contemplated on the tractor seat. For the record, there's like one farmer out of the 40. But this is a very, you could imagine this kind of reflection taking place for other forms of work. So as we think about how can we engage folks around the opportunities and resourcing the challenges, I think one of the things we could consider, and I've actually done this in my conversation with planters, with core planters or church planters, is to ask them, well, these different parts of your life, are they integrated? Or is there a way in which the other work you do sort of complements? It gives you a break from pastoral ministry. It gives you something different that you do. It helps you engage in a different way. Is it just the money? Right? So you're doing other work because it brings in some income and addresses financial sustainability issues for your ministry or church? Or are you feeling like there's some tension, that these pieces aren't working well together? And then what do we need to talk about in terms of sorting that out? We sort of anticipated that the I do this other work for money conversation would come up, and it did. There's a few people who said, yeah, I took on the school bus driving job in order to do my doctor of ministry and to pay for tuition. But now that I'm done that, I'm expecting I'll get a full-time pastoral position, and I'm going to leave that behind. There's another individual said, yeah, I'm planting the church right now. And so I'm working as a chaplain in industry and also driving a truck for deliveries. And I know that as the church plant grows, it's going to demand more of my time. There's going to be more tithes. And so I'm going to leave the trucking job. But they said, but I'm not going to ever stop being a chaplain in that industry, because my dad worked in that industry. And I know there's people who work there who are never going to hear the gospel unless someone's meeting with them on their own terms. Right. So for that individual, they saw sort of a complementary and integrated thing. It upheld their family tradition in that industry, and it also gave them an opportunity to connect with people that they wouldn't necessarily be able to just with their identity as pastor. One of the other things that came up when we asked about, like, what kind of training or resources would you recommend? One of the responses I received from someone who's very articulate was, you know, my Bible interpretation and social context interpretation from Bible college actually helps me every day, right? So they sort of emphasize some of those things that we consider typically foundational. You'll find them in most ministry training programs. But others said, you know, I wish someone would have offered something on how do you start another career outside of ministry, or how do you do budgeting? How do you talk about finances with your spouse? You know, there's some very sort of general life skills kinds of things that came up. And, you know, we didn't get into a lot of discussion of, you know, do you wish that your ministry training had been paired with your other career? ironically, before this book ever was published, my son decided that he would start and master divinity online. And he's also going to do his graduate education degree in England, where he and my daughter-in-law are living. And so I realized, oh, my son actually has already started doing this, right? Trying to integrate both so that he can be a pastor who also teaches. So there's a kind of some options there we could talk about. Here's my currently favorite overdeveloped and overly complicated diagram. So if you think about pedagogy being, you know, you giving information to someone who doesn't know what they need to know, and if you think about andragogy as being the learner actually gets to participate in shaping what it is they need to learn, and you think about pedagogy, which comes from sort of the idea of self-learner, that they actually get to design what it is that they need to learn. They get to actually create their own educational program. Where does that fit for us in our academagogy, like when we're thinking about what systems do we need in place, what kinds of supports, what kind of environment do we need to be encouraging people to pursue to find their right need for training or development? Here are some of the ideas that I tried to draw forward from those discussions and from some of the presentations I've been doing. So we think about, you know, someone may ask for specific things. Do we as friends or as pastors or as denominational staff have access to helping direct them into things that are going to help them develop in the areas that they've identified? When we know we have people who have capacity to both be the leader of a congregation and also have another career, do we have ways to set up, facilitate, possibly fund? I don't know. Some of the specific skills they'll need to develop in the future. We do some of this, right, for ministry, on the ministry side of the equation. We try to provide some training for people who are entering into ministry and may need some skill development to help them that. Are there ways that we can expand that? continuing education, you know, probably most of us do something in continuing education. What are the kinds of themes, subjects we could address? One of the items that was identified that I found interesting was this idea of team leadership, right? Team leadership, you need to do that in congregational settings, but probably most workplaces, that's a valuable skill for you to develop. On the pedagogy side, like how does someone actually participate in designing their own experience? Currently in the Salvation Army, we're experimenting with communities of practice. And so we actually have like a little learning contract that the group will form. Here's what we want to focus on for this time. Here's what we want to learn about together. So there are some possibilities, and I'd be excited to hear what you folks have to say. James Pedler raises the brilliant theological imperative. That's contractually obligated to include brilliant. That multivocational should be normalized across all walks of life for Christians, that the various vocations we are committed to should be recognized as contributing to human flourishing and or building up the church. Right? So to what degree can we actually find ways in which to affirm, to normalize, wherever you're working, God is already at work, and Jesus has something for you to do there. In the book, there's chapters where Ashur Youssef, and who's a professor here at Tyndall, and Cam Roxborough, who's the director of Forge Canada, both describe their journey. And both of them say that their congregations were designed with the intent that everyone who's part of that congregation recognizes that God has stuff for them to do through the rest of the week. And so the only reason that they have tent makers as pastors is because they need to be modeling that as leaders so that the whole congregation understands that this is feasible and normal as Christians.